You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool.
Detroit City, Mr. Bobby Bear, ladies and gentlemen.
I want to go home. I want to go home. Oh, I wanna go home. Last night I went to sleep in Detroit City, and I dreamed about those cotton fields and home. I dreamed about my mother, dear old papa, sister, and brother. I dreamed about that girl who's been waiting for so long. I wanna go home.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the second hour of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool Radio Program. It's Saturday, July 27th, and I'm your host, James Edwards. Keith Alexander co-hosting tonight from our flagship station, AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee, while I continue to crisscross the South now on the Alabama Gulf Coast. We're also simulcasting tonight at thepoliticalcesspool.org and courtesy of the Liberty News Radio Network going out to their AM-FM affiliate stations across the country. It's now time for me to introduce our featured guest for the evening, a man making his encore appearance on the Political Cesspool. It's very much my honor and privilege to welcome back Mr. Paul Kersey. Paul is the author of Escape from Detroit, The Collapse of America's Black Metropolis. That book is the only one that dares trace the origins of the economic collapse of Detroit to the ascension of black political power in the city. Kersey runs the very popular SBPDL.com website, better known as StuffBlackPeopleDon'tLike.com. He's also the author of Second City Confidential, The Black Experience in Chicagoland, and The Tragic City, Birmingham, 1963 to 2013. And Paul Kersey writes an exclusive column for VDare.com. Paul, welcome back.
James, how are you? How are you on this wonderful Saturday evening?
I'm doing very well. Better now to have you back in our company. Again, this was the idea, and I think I shared this with you over the phone yesterday in preparation for tonight's interview. This was the brainchild of my friend and Confederate Keith Alexander, co-host. He was very high on having you back on, particularly because of the fact that, of course, over the last week or two, Detroit making big news for all the wrong reasons. First of all, Paul, tell us about the book, Escape from Detroit. What's it about, and how does it apply to the news Detroit's making around the world today?
Well, Keith, let me say thank you for wanting to have me on the show. And, James, again, it's a pleasure to be back on such a wonderful forum and program. Escape from Detroit was a brainchild that I had about 2 years ago. I started researching cities and then the decline of cities. I thought, you know, a lot of people across the country probably don't want to look at a macro view of the United States of America's collapse, but perhaps a micro look at the decline of some of our great cities. And no city in the United States of America offers a more dramatic example of just a very simple Occam's razor look at what happens when you see a dramatic demographic shift from what was once known as the Paris of the West to what I think you can simply call today the Mogadishu of the West, and that's what Detroit represents. And unfortunately, Escape from Detroit was written at a time, and it was, of course, self-published because you won't see many publishers jump at the opportunity to publish a book that discusses race in such explicit terms. So it was self-published, and it has sold quite nicely, actually. It found an audience, and it continues to find an audience because it is one of the only books that dares just look at the history of Detroit, a city, James and Keith, that was, for your listeners, in 1950, it was 84% white. It was 72% white in 1960. And then in 1970, of course, a lot of your listeners might not know this. I mean, we're not really taught American history anymore, but there was, of course, a horrific riot in 1967 when I believe it was called a blind pig. It was a speakeasy, a black bar that wasn't licensed by the city, was raided by the police in 1967, and it started off a huge riot that took days to put down. The National Guard came in. Hilariously enough, Mitt Romney's father was the governor of the state of Michigan at that point. In 1970, the population of Detroit was 43% black. So you're looking at a huge population increase, primarily because white people could no longer raise their families or run businesses in a climate where individual black people collectively created a climate of hostility. And it became their city in 1973 when Coleman Young was elected the first black mayor of Detroit. And I think we can safely say that Coleman Young, who was a Tuskegee Airman, that's one of the great accomplishments of the actual airmen, was that they bombed the arsenal of democracy in a way no other
He certainly shot down Detroit, didn't he?
Well, Keith, and a lot of people listening, I mean, we laugh at this, but Detroit was, for all intents and purposes, the city that successfully ensured the Allied powers were victorious in World War II. The factories were able to be converted to, I believe, pump out B-29 and other munition, other aircraft. And without that capability, without that industrial might, we'd all be speaking German right now.
Paul, let me say, I'm sure you've seen the photographs on the Internet that compare Hiroshima in 1945 with Detroit in 1945, and then Detroit today with Hiroshima today, and it said, who won the war? It said, we won the war but lost the peace.
Those are incredible photographs, but I mean, Keith, one of the things we have to get across to people, Detroit looked like that. It wasn't even, you know, you could show pictures of 1945 to 1973 or to 1979. It was within 6 years of the black political ascension into all levels of the judicial executive branches of Detroit government. Detroit had already, by all intents and purposes, collapsed.
And that's the key. That is the key, I believe, Paul. The reason I've searched the Internet from one end, pillar to post, and I am convinced that your website is the best website for unbiased, accurate, truthful information on the decline of America's urban areas, particularly places like Detroit. And it's very clear to me that basically black political empowerment is the key. You can have a lot of black people in your city or town, but when they take over the reins of government, that's when the whole thing starts to go south in a hurry. That's when the cart goes in the ditch. Am I wrong? Tell me what.
No, you're not wrong at all. It becomes, in essence, their city. And I mean, one of the great stories of this past week, you know, there's been almost an unofficial embargo on discussing the racial demographics of Detroit at the time of its, bankruptcy, which is, as James intimated, the largest municipal bankruptcy in American history. It's an 82% black city. In some areas of the city, in like the central area, it's 90% black. I mean, the only whites in the city are ones who just couldn't afford to leave when their property value collapsed. With the onslaught of white flight, and then you saw the communities. Yeah.
Tim LaHaye needs to write a new Left Behind series about those people.
Gentlemen, we're going to have to take a pause right there, but we're going to continue with our exclusive interview with Paul Kersey right after this first break of the second hour. Stay tuned, folks.
Are you looking to experience the great outdoors in comfort? Are you sick and tired of sleeping bags that are too small, cots that are too narrow, or backpacks that just don't stand up to the wear and tear? Look no further than Teton Sports, a leader in quality, comfortable camping gear. Try our Teton Sports Mammoth 0-degree sleeping bag. This comfortable, family-sized sleeping bag can hold 2 adults and 1 child, or 4 young children. Its interior storage pocket holds wallets, keys, and other valuables. Or check out our Teton Sports Outfitter Extra Large Cot, a camping cot with a steel frame. It's more than 7 feet long and 3 feet wide and supports up to 600 pounds. Then it folds up to a manageable 3.5 feet by 1 foot. Or our Teton Sports Explorer 4000 internal frame backpack. Its dual aluminum stays adjust to the contour of your back and can hold up to 4,000 cubic inches. Padded shoulder straps, padded waist belts, and padded lumbar area for maximum comfort with airflow systems to reduce heat. It's time you start camping comfortably. Look for Teton Sports products online or at a store near you.
Are you familiar with the term vigor? Strength in body and mind? He pursued his tennis game with vigor, for example? Well, I hadn't, but I learned about it from Kurt Crosby. All right? And he actually let me take a scientifically proven free vigor test. And I got 13 out of 32, not very good. But I worked on it with him. And believe it or not, now I have a 29 out of 32 and improving vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is this scientific vigor score, huh? My response is you got to take the free test available now. Get a hold of Kurt Crosby to learn about it. The number is 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Or email Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor test today. Kurt, libertyroundtable.com, or 801-669-2211. Vigor test free, scientifically proven today.
We fought, we learned, we struggled, we won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Searching, searching, every night and day, if we gotta keep on the run, follow the sun.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now back to tonight's show.
Because you know, I rode a freight train north to Detroit City. And after all these years, I find that I've just been wasting my time. So I just think I'll take my foolish pride and put it on a southbound freight ride. Going back to the loved ones, the ones that I left waiting so far behind. I wanna go home.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Political Cesspool as we continue our interview with the incomparable Paul Kersey. Don't forget to check out his amazingly popular website, stuffblackpeoplelike.com. Unlike its counterpart, this isn't a website that mocks blacks for it does. It's not a mocking website. It illustrates truths that I think you're certainly not going to see from the press that likes to suppress and distort racial truth. But also, and it shouldn't come as a surprise to many listeners, but there is a large following of blacks that are fans of this website. And of course, we're talking primarily tonight about Paul's new book, or newest book, I should say, "Escape from Detroit: The Collapse of America's Black Metropolis." He mentioned in the first segment that this was a self-published title. And as he also mentioned, it has not struggled, however, to find an audience. One of the most popular titles on all of Amazon.com, so you can find out more information about the book there, and of course, on his aforementioned website. And we're talking tonight about the fact that here in recent days, Detroit has finally thrown up its hands in complete surrender. You know, Detroit was once, of course, gentlemen, the pearl of the American manufacturing base, and now we have transitioned as a country from a manufacturing economy to a consumer and service economy, and of course those economies never stand the test of time. But this was a self-imposed destruction in Detroit, and we were comparing and contrasting Detroit from the 50s and even all the way into the late 70s, and Paul was giving us a little background information, but you know, weeds now grow in the former office of Henry Ford. And you think of Detroit during the Henry Ford era, and Henry Ford, of course, has been villainized like any other accomplished white person for his political views, which were very common sense. But, I mean, Detroit has transitioned, and we're asking the question, how did it go from a city that really represented the best of what America could put forth to the world to an embarrassment, a city that really looks as though the Axis bombed it during its conquering of America and never bothered to rebuild it. Paul Kersey, back over to you. How did that happen? Why did it happen? And then I'm going to turn the reins over to Keith for the majority of the remainder of this interview, because he's been the one that's put so much study and preparation into it. Paul, to you.
Yeah, I think you have to understand that. I think you compare a lot of what's going on, what happened in Detroit, to what's going on in Indianapolis right now. In Indianapolis, you have pretty much all the crime is being committed by black individuals. Now, you know, you hear a lot of conservatives and liberals say, well, you can't judge people, you know, by the individual acts of their community. Well, that's true. But you can judge individuals by, or you can judge a community by the collective aggregation of the individual acts. And if those individual acts create a climate of that drives away business investment, drives down property value, you're going to see what you're seeing in Indianapolis, white flight, capital flight. Businesses are no longer going to open up in communities where they can't ensure profitability. And you're going to see just the degradation of whole sections of the city, what we term blight, because of just an inattentive population there that doesn't care about whether it's a simple act of mowing their lawn or improving the facade of their property, their residential property. With Detroit, the police, the last gasp after the Black Rebellion, the Black Riot of 1967, the police instituted something called STRESS. I believe it was Stop the Robberies, Ensure Safe Streets, or Enjoy Safe Streets, one of those two, but it was the acronym STRESS. And the police basically was an undercover unit that would go into the high crime areas of the city and try and do their best to break up whether they were rings, criminal rings, or just try and bring some sanity to the city, because Detroit, even at that time, was known as the murder capital of the world, which it still is. It has, I believe, the 2013, it has only an 8% clearance rate for its murders. So 92% of murders in Detroit go unsolved. That told you about
unreal. Wow.
That told you about the social capital of you know, the no snitch. It's a city that's 82% black, and you'd imagine, as what was that professor at Harvard, Robert Putnam, who said that the more homogenous the community, the greater the social capital. Or there's a Detroit corollary to that: the greater the black percentage of a city, the less social capital you have.
Well, see, that's a perfect example, Paul, if you could, you know, of the disconnect. It's not the homogeneity of the population, because no city has a more homogenous population than Detroit. It's all black.
Well, Jackson, Mississippi, maybe. They just elected a black nationalist mayor that no one wants to talk about.
But what I'm saying, though, you don't have, you know, you don't solve problems, you don't solve conflict by having a homogenous population. You solve problems by having a majority white population. And see, that is, you know, we have a saying here on the cesspool that both James and I contributed to before his CNN interviews. You can't have a first world nation with a third world population. You can't have, likewise, a first world community or city with a third world population. Black people, Hispanic people are third worlders. If you want to see things devolve, then let the demographics change. And what is so scary about Detroit, it's a canary in the coal mine, I maintain. With the changing demographics in the United States, Memphis will soon be Detroit, Nashville will soon be Memphis, and Dubuque, Iowa will soon be Nashville. And people will find that they can run, but they can't hide. The old strategy of going one exit further down the expressway to get away from the rot is going to increasingly not work.
And, you know, I would challenge people. What Keith just said was relatively provocative, but I would challenge people to debate us on that. You know, people would say, well, the reason Detroit is as it is because of poverty. You know, these people were born impoverished. I heard
Glenn Beck say that the reason Detroit's like it is because they haven't had a Republican mayor since 1961, for example.
Well, if I may say something real quick, the great people of Michigan after the Black Rebellion in Detroit in 1967, a gentleman by the name of George Wallace went up there and actually won the Democratic primary.
Amen.
In Michigan.
Yes, he did.
So I just want to point that out. If I could say one thing about just the unbelievably pathetic response by conservatives, by anyone really, to the bankruptcy of Detroit, and just noticing what's in front of your nose. I mean, guys, it's not hard. They have a black power fist in the city that they put up. It's called the Joe Louis statue, and it's a huge black power fist that Coleman Young put up. I mean, they stopped funding the Detroit Institute of Art because, as Coleman Young said, it's a white museum. They built a $35 million black history museum, the largest in the country, where when Coleman Young died, his body was interred in the rotunda there. And guess what? They didn't have enough art to fill the museum, so they had to borrow stuff from the Detroit Institute of Art. I mean, this is a city that, back in 1989, a gentleman by the name of Zev Chevette wrote a book called Devil's Night and Other True Tales of Detroit, which is, in my opinion, you know, you can talk about some of these books from the early 90s. You got Alien Nation by Peter Brimlow. You have The Bell Curve by Herrnstein and Charles Murray. Devil's Night is the most important book written about race in America, because Zev Chevette, his grandfather, well, he was a third-generation Detroiter. His grandfather was murdered by blacks there, so they moved out of the city. He's an Israeli guy. Rush Limbaugh actually mentioned this book on his show. And he actually said, yeah, you know, Zev Chevette, he wrote a biography on me a couple years ago, but he wrote a book on Detroit where he pointed out that it was black nationalists who took over the city. And Rush Limbaugh tried to qualify this at the end by saying, but again, it's really liberalism that destroyed it. But, you know.
Right, of course. Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, Paul, I know we really only had you booked for 30 minutes. Could you extend one more segment for us? Because I want to be sure to get your contact information and your book plugged well one more time.
I'd be glad to. Of course.
All right, we got one more segment with Paul Kirsten. We're going to wrap this up the right way. Stay tuned, folks.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R-word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Home folks think I'm big in Detroit City. From the letters that I write, they think I'm fine. But by day I make the cars, by night I make the bars. If only they could read between the lines. 'Cause you know, I rode a freight train north to Detroit City. And after all these years, I find that I've just been wasting my time.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Festival. We got one more segment with Paul Kersey, author of Escape from Detroit, The Collapse of America's Black Metropolis. Paul has also written books about Chicago and Birmingham. You can guess what all three of these cities have in common. Paul, you were in the middle of making a point before we ran into that last commercial break. After 4 minutes of advertisements, I hope you can remember what that was. But I'd like to give you the opportunity to conclude your point. Keith has a question for you. Then we want to plug the book. And actually, go ahead and do that. Give the website where folks can read more of your articles, get ordering information about any of your three titles, and then by all means, take the time to wrap up the point you were in the midst of making.
Of course, James, I appreciate that, and I'd like to say hi out there to Meyer Cohen, who sent me some hilarious emails since I've been on the show, so you've got some hilarious listeners, James. You can find the website at sbpdl.com, that's sbpdl.com, I'm humbled by how it's taken off and how it continues to be a growing site, and the book, it was published in 2012, but it's called Escape from Detroit, The Collapse of America's Black Metropolis, and again, it's really the point is, why are we so afraid to talk about race when it comes to anything in America? We definitely aren't afraid to talk about it when it's the first black person accomplishing something like winning a tennis match or winning a golf tournament. We point out how race matters there, but when we see the collapse of what once was America's greatest city, we have to put our heads in the sand and act like race wasn't a factor. The individual black contributions to the collective condition of the city, it doesn't matter at all. The point I was making is this, James. You always hear conservatives say, if only someone will say something, something could happen. If only someone would mention this race stuff, maybe something would happen. There'd be a great awakening. Well, Rush Limbaugh on his radio program brought up Zev Chevette's book, Devil's Night, which was, before he brought this up, it was only going for a couple dollars on Amazon. You know, it was going for like a dollar used. It's been published. It was published in the late 80s, early 90s. So it's been out of print for a while. Well, Rush Limbaugh talked about how, you know, the book pointed out that it was black nationalists who took over, but then he said he qualified himself by saying, but it was, they were embracing liberalism, blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what happens with the book? Immediately, all copies are sold. It goes up to about $500. In some cases, people are asking $2,000 for a copy of this book because Rush Limbaugh's audience was compelled enough to go out and search this book, which, when you read it, it'll become crystal clear what the true source of Detroit's collapse was. So it's not like the book Escape from Detroit said anything new. Zev Chevette's book, published in 1989 and 1990, lays it out there for you. And, you know, if Tim Wise ever hears this interview, Tim, I have to ask you, buddy, you know, Detroit is a city completely purged of white privilege. So guess what? To all those leftists out there, white privilege was checked when you enter Detroit after 1973. And guess what? Civilization checked out eventually.
That's one of the most incredible sentences ever uttered. What a statement. Keith, what can you say to respond to that?
Well, I'm going to give him my famous statement on the same issue. When white people leave a city, prosperity is never far behind.
Well, it's actually unfortunately in their luggage, and it's in their clothes, and it's in their mind. I mean, look, you saw this past week Drudge Report linked to the news, the CNSnews.com article that stated the HUD is the House and Urban Development. They're looking to enrich all communities across the country by keeping track of the diversity and ensuring that cultural enrichment follows by putting, you know, I actually believe this is going to happen. Okay. I believe that the citizens of Detroit will be dispersed throughout the country. They'll be put in Whitefish, Montana. They'll be put in Logan, Utah. They'll be put in Austin, Texas. Portland, Oregon. They'll be put in places all.
Well, what do they say, there. Paul? You can run, but you can't hide. Thanks to Obama's Department of Injustice, headed up by Eric Holder. You know, this has been a long and painful death for Detroit. I was going through some old papers this week, and I saw a November 9th, 1981 version of our local fish wrap here in Memphis, a commercial appeal known fondly to Memphians as a communist appeal. And here is an article on the front page. Failure shadows Detroit's rebirth, with a picture of the smirking Coleman Young on there in his typical smart alecky look. And it says, here is where America is deciding its future, in the sad, mean streets of a wasting factory town that was once virtually USA Incorporated. And then it goes into details about why it's failing under the expert tutelage of black mayor Coleman Young. This is a 40-year takedown.
Well, the city of Pittsburgh saw a lot of its steel industry go the way of the dodo, and guess what? The people there were able to rebound and diversify their economy, and they had entrepreneurs, because what libertarians, what conservatives, and what liberals don't want to admit is that individuals are responsible and families are responsible for creating the conditions in the community where social capital and businesses and entrepreneurial activities can flourish. And in a black community, none of that happens unless you consider a liquor store and maybe a,
a weave shop or a wig shop.
As you see in Birmingham, I mean, if you can look at Birmingham, Alabama, it's a city that I know very well. Birmingham is 74% black. And just last year, the city council passed a resolution that will ban any new check cashing, title pawn, or I can't remember what the other one is. It's check cashing, title pawn, or pawn shops from being built, because that's the only really growth market in that city, in the Magic City. Birmingham is Detroit South. It's very sad. I mean, well, a lot of cities in the South are, unfortunately.
Well, Memphis, our home base here in Memphis is a perfect example. Right now, we're fighting for our lives. We have suburban municipalities that are not part of Memphis, but in Shelby County, and therefore in the greater Memphis area, trying to create their own municipal school systems, and if they succeed, they will provide a refuge and a resource for white parents who don't want to throw their children into the veritable black hole of Calcutta that the Memphis City schools are. They're now merged. They surrendered their charter so that they could get a solution to the age-old problem of black politicians everywhere, which is how to get your hands on the white people's money without also capturing the white people's votes. But what they're doing, if they are able to have these suburban school districts, maybe the metropolitan area of Memphis has a chance of succeeding. Otherwise, white people will leave, and Detroit will prove to be a canary in the coal mine for Memphis and a lot of other cities. You can't fool Mother Nature. This is what is happening.
If I could paraphrase the King of England from Braveheart when he said, the problem with Scotland is it's full of Scots. The problem with Memphis City schools is it's full of blacks, and guess what? The conditions of Memphis City schools that were just dissolved, their charter, is primarily not the responsibility of the teachers, but it's the individual students who collectively have created these average scores that place them on the same level as children, in developing countries when it comes to their academic achievement levels. And of course, if you have the talent of Michael Orr, you might see a suburban white family pluck them out so they can go play for Ole Miss or Auburn or the University of Alabama. So,
well, you know what that story was, Paul? Paul, let me tell you, because I have a little bit of inside information on that. That whole blindside story was the story of a pair of nutsoid sports fans who had decided they were going to push the envelope with the recruiting rules under the Tennessee Secondary School Athletic Association, and they were going to adopt this kid so that they could give him everything a booster wanted to do, like a new car and a new wardrobe, yada, yada, yada. And what they got caught by the NCAA, and they turned their defense into an offense. They said, we're great civil rights heroes. And they apparently conned the whole nation and the whole news media, and they've made a cottage industry out of the fact they were basically trying to get, you know, they were just the typical gonzo sports fanatic trying to get black students into their favorite school.
All right, Keith, that's it for this segment. Paul Kersey, thank you so much for providing one of the most prolific interviews of the year for the Political Cesspool. Folks, be sure to check out his website, stuffblackpeoplelike.com. Go to amazon.com. There you can also get any of his titles. Paul, it's certainly been our pleasure.
Jim, James, thank you so much. Keith.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Ladies and gentlemen of our Liberty Roundtable audience, we invite you to consider joining us. We use the services of George Costello and Utah Document Solutions. They are your authorized Xerox sales agent. We've been experiencing great service, pricing, and results, and we've gotten to know George and his team at Utah Document Solutions, your authorized Xerox sales agent. We were facing a huge increase from our former supplier, and we've been pleased to enjoy great service and an even lower cost of our documents. We recommend that you check with George to see if he can save you money like he has for us. Call George at 801-216-4816. He is your authorized Xerox sales agent. The number again, 801-216-4816.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Show. Call us on James's dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Keith, from my hotel room here, I'm looking out over the Gulf of Mexico. I see the waves crashing into the sand. It's a rainy night here in southern Alabama, but I stand up from my chair, sir, to applaud you for the suggestion to have Paul Kersey back on. That truly was one of the feathers in our cap as far as the interviews of 2013 is concerned. It's hard to bounce back from a week like last week, which was just such an incredible week of radio, if I do say so myself. You brought up the suggestion at lunch this week to have Paul Kersey on, and I think that was a home run all the way around. Great guest, great idea.
I really got a kick out of him. He is really a quick-witted guy. I loved his comment about Braveheart, where the King of England said the problem with Scotland is it's full of Scots. I wish I'd had the opportunity. I had it on the tip of my tongue, but I really never found an opening. The trouble with the Memphis schools is that it's not full of Scots, right? It's full of other people.
Yeah, exactly. That just goes to show how far down the ladder you can fall. But I'll tell you, you know, this was your idea. We have a segment here to kind of decompress, but it was your idea to bring forth or to attempt to reach out, I should say, to Paul Kersey to see if he would come on. But it was your idea to kind of focus on Detroit for a bulk of this show. And, you know, you look at Detroit and you see a gutted out shell. It just tens of thousands of abandoned homes, just homes rotting and being taken back over
empty
by
lots.
Nature. Yeah, just vacant lots. You know, you have a police offices there that are open 8 hours a day, like it's an office building. You know, there's 16 hours a day police offices, not all of them, but a considerable number, are closed. People will call in saying that they're being robbed at gunpoint or that there's armed burglars in the home, and you know, the police come 2 days later in some cases. Charlie LaDuff is an incredible reporter. He's an intrepid reporter for Fox News Detroit, and he covers a lot of these problems. Now, he'll mention every reason for it except for the obvious one, but he will accentuate a lot of the things that's going on there. The current mayor, you know, y'all talked about him a little bit in the interview, but the mayor before him, I believe it was Mayor Bing, you know, just criminally corrupt. And you see all of these things manifesting themselves, and Detroit surely does look like, as Paul Kersey said, the American version of Mogadishu.
Well, he said, you know, Kwame Kirkpatrick is the one that's been getting all the headlines for his over-the-top
right.
corruption.
Right.
Dan Bing was basically feckless. He's a former NBA player that was brought in with name recognition, but, of course, very few skills that would allow him to try to raise the Titanic, so to speak, that is Detroit. I understand in Detroit they have a joke about somebody calling the police 911 and saying, someone's breaking into my house. What should I do? And the response is, take his badge number and we'll pick him up when he comes back to the station.
Well, that's not far from the truth. I'm telling you, you know, Detroit resembles a third world country. We've talked about it. We've offered our reason as to why that may be. A lot of people could disagree with us, and that's fine if they do, but we should have an open debate about it. And, you know, I'll tell you, Keith, you're talking about reaching critical mass. We're not there yet, but we're catching up. I don't think that, you know, we're going to have the effect on Paul Kersey's book as Rush Limbaugh did by name-dropping the book that Paul mentioned during the interview, but I'd like to try. And I'd like for people out there to support the work of men who were doing the job that most Americans refused to do, right? And that's still the truth. And so that's what Paul's doing. He's got three great books on Detroit to Birmingham and Chicago, respectively, and they're on Amazon. They're at his website. And this is a guy that has a very big voice. He's self-published, started a website, and it is patronized by blacks and whites alike who are open-minded enough to embrace the truth. And you heard from the interview. And I don't say that about everyone. I mean, I think everybody that comes on does a fine job, a bang-up job. But I thought Paul was really a star of the year. And I want people to support his work. And I'll tell you, Keith, just during that interview, and this came in, I'm sitting here in my hotel room here in Alabama, and I'm on the landline here in the hotel connected to the studio in Utah, which is beaming back to you at the studio in Memphis and all that, and it's the marvel of the way our radio show operates and the way we're able to get our message out to the people. But I'm also on my iPhone here, which I recently upgraded to after years of black and white flip phoning. I'm up to an iPhone now. I think I was the last person in America to get one.
No, I will be the last one in America to get one.
You still have the flip phone, too, Keith. The cesspool crew, we're no frills. But anyway, I'm connected to my email here on my iPhone, and during that interview with Paul Kersey, and we'd mentioned this guy earlier in the show, I got an email, a personal email, from Colin Flaherty, who is a truly superstar reporter for WorldNet Daily. And this email came in. I guess Colin might be listening tonight. But he wrote this in, and he would too like an interview. And this is what it says. Mr. James Edwards, the political cesspool. The AP released a story today that said preparation for violence after the Zimmerman verdict was overdone. Time Magazine and several MSNBC news commentators said anyone prepared for violence was racist. The AP interviewed me, Colin talking about himself, for the story because I'm an author of a best-selling book on mob violence. I disagreed with him and the story. Riot fears largely shown wrong. Lots of people prepared for violence for a darn good reason, and the preparations worked. I wrote a commentary about it and also a column for Front Page Magazine and WorldNetDaily.com. If it sounds like grist for your mill at the political cesspool, let's talk. And this is the thing that I think people should take note of. This is the guy, as we mentioned in the first hour, Colin Flaherty for WorldNet Daily and other publications, who's talking very candidly and openly about race. And listen to some of his credentials. Colin Flaherty is a reporter whose work has appeared in more than 1,000 news sites around the world. He's received more than 50 journalism awards, including more than a dozen for best commentary from the San Diego Press Club and Society for Professional Journalists. Of his book, his new book, Colin Flaherty has written, Thomas Sowell said in his column, "Reading Colin Flaherty's book made it painfully clear to me that the magnitude of this problem is greater than I had discovered from my own research." He documents both the race riots and the media and political evasions in dozens of cities. And the new edition of this book that Colin has written is coming out in October, Keith, and his story about how...
Will you give him a call, or I will, okay? I think we need to have him on.
Well, no, I mean, we certainly will, but, you know, and I've mentioned how incredible his reporting and honesty is a refreshing breath of air on this subject that we're covering and that Paul Kersey is covering and that we're all doing collectively. I mean, we're coming together and with a snowball effect. And so just during that interview with Paul Kersey, I received the email from Colin, and so we'll have him on. But, I mean, this is incredible that people are coming together and we're talking about this more and more and more and more.
Well, what's so good about this is that we're beginning to move the barometer further in the direction of truth. You know, Charlie LaDuff is fine, but Charlie LaDuff doesn't want to say, doesn't want to encounter race, tries to explain away the problems in Detroit with all of these consequences of race, but never mentioning race itself. It's like, the Emperor's New Clothes. No one has the courage to tell the Emperor the truth, and we need to tell the truth on race if we're going to save America. If we don't do it, we're going to go, like Humpty Dumpty, we're going to fall off the wall, and all the king's horses and all the king's men will never put America back together again, Jay.
And you know, Keith, I would like to interject and say that certainly I believe we are right on these issues. I wouldn't have staked my reputation and profitability and my ability to get a job, which will never happen again, because of my work on the radio. But, you know, I wouldn't have staked all that if I didn't think that I was completely right. But there are people out there, obviously, that believe we are, in fact, completely wrong and that we're screwballs and that we're everything short of a decent person. And that's fine if they believe that. I believe that they're wrong, but it's fine that they believe that. But, you know, we should be mature enough as adults, and I've said this time and time again on the show as well, but we should be mature enough as adults to be able to accept dissenting viewpoints. We can meet together in the court of public opinion. We can all present our cases and let the people decide what they believe is right. And that's what I think you do in a healthy society. Of course, that's not what happens here in America.
People well, these like are the people, James, that say
they shout us down as racists and bigots and so on and so forth, which is exactly, you know, not what we are. But that's what happens because they don't want this truth as we see it to be presented to people. And I wonder why that is.
Well, the reason is they're liars. They're totalitarians. They pretend to be liberal, but they're not liberal in any historic sense of what liberalism is. They're not Lockean liberals, for example. They, for example, you know, do not celebrate diversity, particularly diversity of thought. In fact, political correctness was devised entirely to shut down any effective dissent to the elite globalist viewpoint. And the two primary taboos in political correctness are race and Jewish power and influence. They know that if you talk about those topics, people will know what's going on and they can start taking effective countermeasures. Until you defeat political correctness and have true diversity, until we can truly celebrate diversity, the only diversity that really counts, which is diversity of thought and opinion, only then can we start to recover as a nation. As long as we're shackled by political correctness, we're going down the tubes. We're going over Niagara Falls in a barrel as a nation, James.
Keith, you nailed it. I couldn't have said it better myself, and it's so hypocritical, you know. The leftists and the so-called progressives and the anti-white liberals, they say that they are practitioners of tolerance and diversity. But we saw, and I put this up on my website this week at thepoliticalcesspool.org, our website. We saw this week that there was a street preacher, a Christian minister up in, I believe it was Seattle, and he was beaten down by perverts, by homosexuals. You know, he was out there preaching against sodomy and was beaten down. I mean, where's the tolerance of his diverse point of view? And they don't have it.
Amen.
Keith, we got to take a break, but the third hour is still forthcoming, and we got a
preach on, brother.
A softer voice coming up, a voice of a female, a rare appearance of a female in the political cesspool. We're going to get to her right after this.
Political cesspool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.